Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Along with my co-host, Richard Hurley. Thanks for joining us this evening. Hello, Richard.
Hey, good evening, David, and everyone out there tonight. We have plenty of news to report, which will be of interest to veterans as well as those still serving in the military. So we have lots to cover tonight. But first, I'll remind everyone that this is a call-in show that welcomes your views, comments, and questions, so you can call us anytime during the show at 1-888-627-6008. Again, the toll-free call-in number is 1-888-627-6008. Before I get to some of the news that we're going to talk about tonight, I just wanted to tell the situation that happened today. And first of all, I think everyone's glad that the government's back working again, especially our veterans. I know I've received dozens and dozens and dozens of calls ever since Friday, from our veterans who were concerned about what this all meant to them with the government shutting down. The fact is that the VA personnel that works on the benefits side are not considered essential employees, and therefore, if the government shutdown had continued, they were going to be going home at noon today. But fortunately, that did not happen, but as one of the veteran employees, Droz, said to me today, we'll see what happens in 3 weeks. But it's relevant because I had a phone conference scheduled with a decision review officer on a very important case regarding a veteran who's turning 90 on March the 3rd, a World War II vet who's been fighting for his claim for decades and got the claim going in 2003. And the VA had been denying him. We had to go to federal court. We finally got him service-connected. And today's conference call was to determine what would be the disability rating for this veteran. The VA wanted to compensate him at 10%, and clearly the medical evidence showed that the veteran should have been compensated at a lot more than that. And the decision review officer and I agreed that we would have this phone conference prior to the decision review officer issuing a statement of the case, in which all you veterans know that would have meant the case would then be appealed yet again for this veteran to the Board of Veteran Appeals. But we reached an agreement, and as a result, this veteran's going to get a retroactive check somewhere in the neighborhood of about $200,000, and he'll be rated at about 60% going forward. However, if the government had indeed shut down, that conference call never would have happened. And who knows when we would have been able to have that conference call, and when we would have resolved the case like we did. So, we're very relieved to get this done, but you know, it just shows, David, how important, and yes, our veterans on an individual case-by-case basis are affected by what goes on in Congress. The legislation that's coming out of there, you know, David, I'm sure you're getting the same phone calls. I've already gotten approximately 33 emails today regarding this RAMP program, and David, I know you're going to talk about that later. Yeah. So what happens in D.C. is extremely important to our veterans. And, you know, I can't say enough that it's very essential that our veterans get out there on the ground floor and you know, in the trenches and work your congressmen, work your senators. Let them know that what they do does matter. And, you know, David, before I move into something else, I'm sure you would like to maybe add to that. And you, I'm sure you have your own experiences.
Yeah, I think those are some great points. And as you said, we were lucky, and certainly the veteran we were representing, that you represented so well at the phone conference hearing today, really grateful. I mean, it came down to the wire because, as I understood it, the Senate ended up taking a vote around noon today, and your hearing was set for 2. Fortunately, it went forward. I know you were emailing that decision review officer early in the morning just to see if it was going to happen. But, yeah, it does show the impact because if it hadn't gone as planned, who knows when it would have been. It could have been delayed months. And it also was a great opportunity for you to, bring some closure to that case, which you did. So congratulations. That was a great win. And I know the veteran has got to be pleased about that. But yeah, as you say, we're going to talk more tonight about some of those changes which veterans are going to be seeing in the next year, this appeals reform and claims reform, et cetera. So, but I know you have some news for us, Richard, about the big story coming out of Aurora, Colorado.
Yes, I do. And we discussed this last year on our show on August the 21st, 2017, with the Denver Post investigator reporter David Nagoya, which is the status of the problems surrounding the construction of the VA Medical Center in Aurora, Colorado. And as I tell this story, you know, veterans, keep in mind we're talking about budgets and everything else coming out of Congress. Well, this is, you know, this is kind of a juggernaut when it comes to how we spend our money. Last Wednesday, January 17th, the House Committee on Veteran Affairs, chaired by Representative Phil Rowe, held an oversight hearing to examine the construction of the new Rocky Mountain Regional Medical Center in Aurora, Colorado. Chairman Rowe noted that the hearing was the seventh hearing that the committee has held examining construction of the new Rocky Mountain Regional Medical Center in Aurora, Colorado. As he said, and I quote, "The road to completing this hospital has been extremely long and bumpy. The groundbreaking ceremony was in 2009. That's 9 years ago. That's all told, the price tag is at least $2 billion. This situation must never happen again, but the finish line is near. Mr. Kaufman and I toured the medical center last week to see for ourselves. Today we will discuss just how near and take a close look at the facility that has been produced." Chairman Rowe also stated, "This construction debacle," and these are his words, "changed the way VA builds hospitals. In 2015, Congress mandated that another expert agency take over management of all VA super construction projects, which is everything over $100 million. That agency is the Army Corps of Engineers. All available evidence suggests this was the right decision. In just over 2 years, the Army Corps has guided the project from less than 60% complete and mired in contractor disputes to 98% complete. The VA has accepted all but one of the buildings, the Diagnostic and Treatment Center. But the end of the construction is merely the beginning of the VA's activation effort. Activation is never easy. Unfortunately, in this hospital's activation, the team has continued to correct design and construction errors." Again, we're talking $2 billion, vets. Chairman Rowe also stated the design of this facility began over 10 years ago. It has already been well established how architectural novelty and extravagance drove up the construction costs. In addition to that, so much time has elapsed that the practice of medicine, building codes, and intended uses for the spaces have changed. It is deeply troubling that this new Aurora Medical Center doubles the square footage of the existing Denver Medical Center, but includes the same number of beds and actually reduces primary care capacity. There are also hundreds of errors, individually small, but which add up to a significant problem that must be corrected. Things like a sink in an operating room, services that cannot be cleaned, inadequate air conditioning system, voltage problems, an entire data center that must be rearranged. There are always mistakes to be fixed at the end of a construction job, but I have to wonder whether the clinicians who will treat veterans in this facility ever scrutinize its specifications. Chairman Rowe also stated, even after the new medical center opens, the VA must continue operating the old medical center because presently some of the primary care doctors and the PTSD residential rehabilitation facility have nowhere else to go. Amazing. When Congress authorized this project and continued to authorize it through all its struggles, having two major VA hospitals 6 miles apart was never part of the deal. The local leadership expressed their commitment to closing down the old facility as soon as possible and recouping as much money for the taxpayers from the assets as they can. This committee is going to make sure that happens. I'd also note, and this came out of our interview with Dave back on August 21st, 2017, that whenever they were doing cost overruns and they needed to increase the budget, increase expenses, et cetera, many of these conversations were held at lunch counters or dinner, and they would merely put on a napkin, you know, I need to an additional $500,000 or whatever the case may be, but nothing official, nothing on letterhead, nothing that went in and was scrutinized, but merely on a napkin, and then it was approved and off they went. H.R. 4243, VA Asset and Infrastructure Review Act, which we reported out of the committee in November, would give VA the tools it needs to expedite building a new PTSD rehab facility on the Aurora campus and cut through bureaucratic hurdles to dispose of the Denver campus. And I can tell you, after visiting out there last week, Mr. Rose said, this particular facility is a poster child for why we need VA asset review. If any of you have any doubt about that, please make the trip out to Denver and look. It will give you teeth to know that we need to do this. Chairman Rowe concluded by stating, now is the time to add up what has been gained and lost from this experience. VA added a state-of-the-art spinal cord injury treatment center. I do not want to mention that this truly was the state-of-the-art. That was one of the most impressive parts of my trip, was this new spinal cord treatment center. There could not be a better one in the world, and I know that DAV looked at this and helped design it. I want to commend VA for this, and I think once it's implemented, it really will be a state-of-the-art facility for our injured veterans. Also, new imaging capabilities, amenities for patients, and a modern facility to serve a burgeoning veteran population decades into the future. On the other side of the ledger, the VA lost a significant amount of primary care space and must continue correcting defects potentially up until the day the doors open. And of course, successive groups of VA managers have spent a mind-boggling amount of taxpayer money, unquote. I would add that according to a January 15, 2018 editorial in the Denver Post, the Aurora VA facility was once planned to open in 2013 at a cost of about $537 million. But now it will be closer to $2 billion 5 years later. What is even worse, according to the Denver Post, is that VA officials passed on building a rehabilitation center for vets suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, a significant need. The upshot is that PTSD sufferers have to continue using the Denver location for at least 3 years and possibly for five. Remember, this Denver facility is approximately 6 miles away from the Aurora facility. Right here in Florida, we have one facility down in St. Pete, and then another facility in Gainesville, which is about 90 miles apart. Also,
one in Tampa.
Denver Post and Tampa. Tampa's more than 6 miles. Another regrettable fact is that though the Aurora facility will be twice the size of the old Denver location, there's only half as much space for primary care rooms, a reduction from 64 to 30, and it lacks room for 7 existing patient care teams serving 8,500 patients. And though the new campus features a research building, many researchers will remain in Denver as well as another leased office space beyond the Aurora campus. For our listeners, we welcome your views, comments, and questions regarding this particular article as well as any others you have. So you can call us at 1-888-627-2346. 6008. Again, the toll-free call-in number is 1-888-627-6008. Let me know if you think that this was money well spent. Remember, the original price tag was $537 million to open up in 2013, and as of January 15, 2018, we're up to $2 billion. It's just amazing. It's just amazing with the waste. Anyway, David, what else do you have?
That is just an incredible story, and if I could just offer a few observations. Yeah, for our listeners, as Richard said, we had interviewed a Denver Post investigative reporter back August 21st. You can listen to our archived podcast of that interview on our website, bbsradio.com/TheVeteransNewsHour. And we do welcome your calls tonight. This Denver Post article from last week also just hit on some really important points, even more than what came out from in the congressional hearing, which is this new facility. It's twice as large, but it has half as much space for primary care rooms, and it lacks enough room for the existing patient care teams. It has something that is not going to be fully used, the research building, and they won't have the rehab center for PTSD patients. So it's really, really an incredible situation. It just goes to show you the need for really close oversight. And this has had an effect on veteran care. You know, this thing has been in the works for a decade or even longer, and it takes them that long to get up to speed, and they're not even quite open yet. But it's a story worth continuing attention, and we'll do that in the upcoming months. But in other news, another significant milestone this past week on Wednesday, VA Secretary David Chulkin testified before the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee. You know, that was just before the one-year anniversary of the Trump administration, and Secretary Chulkin had been promoted up from the head of the healthcare side of the VA to the position of secretary of the entire VA. He's been working hard, to his credit, been doing a lot of things, has a lot of good ideas. But he issued a progress report. He was called before the Senate Veteran Affairs Committee to talk about what the VA is actually doing to implement the various reforms which were enacted into law during the past year. So we've talked on a lot of shows over the past year. The political system is very partisan and pretty dysfunctional. The one area where there seems to be a lot of bipartisan support, at least on most veteran issues, whether that's window dressing is another issue, is that a veteran issue. So Congress got together with very little objection from either party and passed about 10 major pieces of legislation touching on accountability, touching on the claims and appeal system, touching on educational benefits, training programs, and certainly the health care issues, which are still in work in progress. But the Senate Veteran Affairs Committee, and you can, for those of you that are interested, it's a great thing about the Internet. Go to veterans.senate.gov. That's veterans.senate.gov. You can check out, you can watch the videos of the testimony. You can read the written testimony that was presented by Secretary Chulkin and others. But the chairman of the committee is Senator Johnny Isaacson of Georgia. He asked Secretary Chulkin to kind of outline the progress that the VA's made, as well as the challenges that the VA is still facing in trying to implement that legislation that had been passed in 2017. And it's interesting because Secretary Isaacson started off by saying the hearing wasn't about what's happened in the past, it's what they're trying to do now to correct the things that happened in the past. He characterized it as, quote, an accountability meeting. He also went on to say, you know, that this was not a time. It's very interesting. He said, quote, the administration, our veterans, and this committee are lucky to have Secretary Chulkin, but we are at the time where there are no excuses. There are no excuses for why we don't correct the problems we've had with hiring. There are no excuses we don't correct the problems we've had with IT, information technology. There's no excuse for not correcting the problems we have with veterans' appeals, among other areas. So this is all about accountability, Senator Isaacson said. He added that it's all about looking at what we have passed and looking for the results that are to come in the future so we can do a good job for the veterans of the United States of America, unquote. So Senator Eisenstein highlighted a few of the main laws that have been passed, the Accountability and Whistleblower Protection Act of last year, the Educational Assistance Act, and the Veterans Appeals Improvement and Modernization Act. As I said, there are about 10 major pieces of legislation that were passed by Congress, signed into law, and the VA is in the process now of implementing those. And that's why the Senate is being proactive in trying to see where things are now. And that was the purpose of the hearing. One thing that Secretary Eisenstein seemed particularly concerned about was the fact that a year into the Trump administration, there are four very senior, important positions in the department that are still unfilled. And one of those was Secretary Shulkin's former position, the Undersecretary for Health, which is amazing because we all know what a big issue the veterans' health situation has been over the last decade, at least the last 5 years in particular. Another vacancy is for the Assistant Secretary of Accountability and Whistleblower Protection. Another one is the Undersecretary for Benefits, which is obviously very important for it's a very critical position the VA needs filled. And finally, the Secretary of Information Technology, which is particularly critical given the reliance on these laws that have been passed, reliance on more efficient technology to get things done. So Secretary Eisenstein was basically calling on Secretary Shulkin to basically speak to these issues. And before we get to those, I wanted to go back over to Richard and get your thoughts and observations and questions that you would hope that they would be addressing.
Well, you know, I think from a nuts and bolts point of view, I just wish they would focus more on the compensation side of the ledger here, the benefit side. It just seems like we spend a lot of time, and Congress spends a lot of time on the health side, in the VA hospitals, and I've said this more than a few times. A lot of my clients, if not probably more than 50% of my clients, really don't complain so much about the health side. They believe that they're getting pretty good treatment by the VA. But it's the compensation side, the benefit side, that seems to be lacking. And whenever we have these hearings and Shulkin has to testify and senators or congresspeople are questioning Shulkin, they just seem to avoid talking about the benefit side. And maybe they're doing it purposely because they don't want to remind the public at large that we have between 400,000 to 500,000 cases on appeal right now. And, that's part of that backlog. And, what are we doing about it?
If I could add something to that, Richard, that's a great point that Secretary Shulkin's testimony, he patted the VA on the back by saying that they've got their backlog of claims down, that they only had, something in the order of between 70,000 and 85,000 claims that are in backlog status, which means that they're past 125 days. But that's really deceptive because what he's not talking about at all is the fact that, at least 10% or more, actually, of the claims end up on appeals, which accumulate, as you said, the number of post-notice of disagreement claims are somewhere north of 400,000. And he left that number completely out. All he said was that the Board of Veterans Appeals, quote, is currently on pace to produce over 81,000 decisions during fiscal year 2018. We're already, 4 months into 2018. But the thing I would point out is he was silent. His testimony was silent about this other backlog that they don't track. And you and I know, Richard, that we deal a lot with the St. Petersburg Regional Office, and they consistently tell us that they are working on cases where the notice of disagreement was filed in 2014, All right, so now we're in 2018. They're still working on cases where the appeals were filed in 2014. And keep in mind, listeners, that that's just the first step of the appeal. And, you know, the regional office is rather notorious for rubber stamping denials, which means the veteran then has to go to the next stage of an appeal, which is an appeal to the Board of Veterans' Appeals, which is another 3 or 4 year wait if you want a hearing. So I think that's an important point. I completely agree with you, Richard, that they seem to be overlooking that backlog problem. But let me touch on a few things that Secretary Shulkin mentioned in his testimony. He did talk about accountability. You know, they passed the Whistleblower Protection Act. They've established an Office of Accountability and Whistleblower Protection, and they claim to be doing, you know, many investigations now into complaints, and perhaps there's, you know, some improvement in that regard. I mean, it's a step in the right direction of trying to improve the culture, I suppose. The next thing, as far as the appeals reform, as I said earlier, Secretary Shulkin was, you know, very pleased with the fact that the Board of Veterans Appeals is currently on pace, as he said, to produce over 81,000 decisions in this fiscal year. But he really didn't talk about the much larger backlog. He also said that the VA, and this is something we've talked about before, this Veterans Appeals Improvement and Modernization Act, which was signed into law August 23rd of this past year, making major changes, the most drastic changes in many, many decades in the VA claims appeals system. The VA was given by that law at least a year and a half, to start implementing this. So they started a pilot project called the Rapid Appeals Modernization Program. For those of you that like acronyms, it's RAMP. And that was launched November 1st, just a few months ago. And it's designed to start selecting some participants. And we've had a few clients where they've been offered this opportunity. It's basically, at this point, up until February of 2019, so for the next 13 months from now, the VA is selectively picking cases and giving veterans that were already in the appeal system an opportunity to voluntarily opt into this new so-called Rapid Appeals Modernization Program. And they don't have to. Again, it's a voluntary option. But one thing I've noticed is that the options given do not include the fast track to the Board of Veterans Appeals. It's basically an opportunity either to have a higher level review but no hearing, no opportunity to provide new evidence, or they can submit a new supplemental claim, which might be perceived as just continuing to keep the hamster on the hamster wheel, keep that spinning for a while. Anyway, it's a trial program. Kudos to the VA for at least trying out this program. Hopefully that they'll recognize problems that may exist, and in the next year or so, try to work those out.
But if I may,
yes,
because like I said earlier in the show, I've been getting bombarded with emails from our clients and even people, non-clients who've been receiving this notice about the RAMP program, and every one of them, 100% across the board, are like bewildered about what they're getting in the mail. They have no idea whether it's to help them. They're assuming that the VA is trying to do something to help them. They don't understand the possible pitfalls to it. Basically, they throw their hands up in the air and contact the lawyer, which is what they should do. I'm glad they're doing that. But what about the veteran who doesn't have a lawyer or have a representative and who gets this in the mail? I guarantee you they're going to assume that this is a program that they're believing that the VA is implementing in order to help them. And, and sign up. And they really don't have anyone to turn to and get some advice as to whether or not, the pros and cons about signing up for this program. And I don't know. It's just another one of those bureaucratic decisions that I think is more harmful than good. But maybe, as you just said, David, you know, in a year, year and a half, they work out the quirks to it and can tweak it a little bit better. But in the meantime, what damage could come of a veteran who's got a claim pending, and now he signs up for this program expecting that he's going to have some sort of finality in the next 6-9 months, when you and I both know, David, that that's just not the case. So, you know,
right.
You know, we'll see what happens 18 months from now, but hopefully, you know, we're not going to see veterans who get damaged because of this legislation.
Right. Well, the major drawbacks I see is that when the VA tells a veteran, okay, your case is on appeal, you're unhappy with the first decision, here are your options. One, you can go ahead and file a new claim again, more time on the hamster wheel. Or number two, you can ask for a higher level review within our same office, but you don't get a hearing and you don't get an opportunity to submit any new evidence. In other words, they're basically making another decision based on the same stuff they denied it on in the first place. And furthermore, their legal duty to assist no longer, by law, no longer exists. So to me, if there's any, you know, rapid an increase in the processing for the VA, it's going to be that it makes it easier for the VA to deny things and keep pushing them forward, which might create a lot more work for the Board of Veterans Appeals, which even if they crank out 100,000 cases this year rather than the 80,000 they're expected to, there's still going to be a growing backlog of cases on that. But before we move on to our next topic, I want to, again, invite our listeners to call in. It's a news and talk show. We welcome your views, your comments, and questions. This is David Corey along with Richard Hurley. We're talking about current status of the VA and how they're implementing the major laws passed by Congress the last year. Our toll-free call-in number, grab your pen and paper, is 1-888-627-6008. That's 1-888-627-6008. So give us a call. Let us know what's on your mind. If you've had any experience with this new Rapid Appeals Modernization Program, so-called RAMP program, give us a call. We'd be glad to hear from you on that issue. And a couple other things that Secretary Shulkin talked about that Congress wanted his input on, and kind of a status report, would be this part of the claims program. He talked about the so-called decision-ready claims program. We've talked about this in prior programs, too. This is the decision-ready claims program is an initiative the VA started this past year, again, where they're shifting the work they used to do. They shift it to the veteran who's filed a claim and the veteran service officer, or VSO. It's a program that if a veteran, and they have to have the help of a VSO, in other words, they can't do this on their own, that they get all the records, the medical records, the military service records, they schedule and complete a compensation and pension exam, which may be with a contracted examiner outside the VA, which is a big trend right now, that they get all the information they need, and then that the veteran along with the VSO certify that they've submitted everything that needs to be submitted, and they are not relying on the VA to do anything to help them whatsoever. And the VA's return promise for that participation and that work, they promise they'll make a decision within 30 days. Well, guess what? Again, that shifts all the work that the VA used to do, which was to analyze the evidence, see what records needed to be obtained, make sure that they were obtained, and that they had a duty to assist. Now that duty to assist is essentially out the window for those claims in exchange for promising to make a decision within 30 days. Now, my thoughts for veterans out there is this. When they promise you they'll make a decision within 30 days, that's 30 days from when they've received the formal claim, all right? You have to realize, too, that it might take you and your VSO 6 months or a year to get the records to fully develop the claim where you're confident that you've nailed it down. You might go to a contracted C&P examiner and find out that that report has lowballed of the severity of your disability. You might have PTSD, and they might say that you should have a 10% rating, and you think you should be at 70% or 100%, which means then you're going to want more time to get another opinion, another medical review. So these things take time. So when the VA says they'll make a decision within 30 days, realize there's a lot of lead time, preparation time, which is not on the VA at that point. So something to be careful about. I'm not saying that there won't be some situations where this process might be useful, but it's one you have to. Unfortunately, you can't always take the VA at face value. I think the bureaucracy, the VA, is looking for ways to make their work easier, and so they'll cut corners and whatever they need to do. Sound a little cynical, perhaps, but...
I don't think you are, David, because, you know, I, having come from the civil side of the law when I was practicing up in New York and New Jersey and dealing with a lot of insurance companies, both on the plaintiff side and defense side, and actually I was of counsel to an insurance company, so I dealt with a lot of those claims as well. I see no difference between the VA and the work that I did with these insurance companies. And, you know, the philosophy, whether I was on the defense side or the plaintiff side, the philosophy clearly was delay and don't pay the claims. Have depositions, interrogatories, and just, you know, stretch this stuff out in the civil courts for as long as you possibly can do that, and that's what we see with the VA. You know, no different. So I don't think you're being overly cynical at all. I think of the two of us, I'm probably the more cynical one. But, you know, we hear this delay now, you know, delay, deny, and hope you die. I mean, that's a very real thing that I hear when I go to different veteran groups, and all of a sudden some veteran will just stand up and shout that statement out. So, the bottom line is, what are we going to do? What's Secretary Shulkin going to do to move these cases faster? And again, that, to me, that's about getting down there, getting your hands dirty, and working these claims. You know, and I'll just give you a quick, for instance, the case that we settled today, that I settled today on behalf of this World War II veteran. You know, I got it settled by constantly emailing this Dro. And to her credit, she took me up on my offer to talk about it over the phone. You know, she pulled her file out, I pulled my file out, and we resolved it. And it works. And, you know, that's part of the mediation arbitration process. It works. And I would just hope that instead of all this fancy legislation that we seem to be, you know, seeing from Congress and these politicians, that someone starts, the light bulb goes off, and they realize that it's really about working the files with the attorney, with the representative. So, again, I'll be probably saying this until I'm blue in the face. And on a case-by-case basis, I'm sure I'll see some nice things, but we just need to, you know, this kind of policy should be done across the board for all our vets.
Right. Well, I completely agree, and I think the VA, it's unfortunate that the VA was really behind the appeals legislation. The elements were... they convinced Congress to eliminate the VA's legal duty to assist once a case goes on appeal, because all that does is it actually reinforces a complaint that the VA has had about lawyers for years. The VA doesn't like lawyers being involved. They say lawyers shouldn't be involved. I agree with that. The system shouldn't be that complicated, but it wasn't the veteran lawyers that have made it that complicated. And furthermore, the VA is basically making it adversarial by eliminating the duty to assist, and the VA bureaucracy was behind this legislation. They eliminated the duty assist, which makes it more adversarial, which by that I mean that a veteran has to do more to protect himself or herself and needs really experienced veteran service officer or a lawyer. Doesn't have to be a lawyer, but at least a veteran service officer. And, you know, veteran service officers vary tremendously in their experience and their skill. So something to stay up with is those of you that are interested, those of you that might be VSOs out there, I think you know what I'm talking about, but it's important. Again, good website just to track the legal stuff, the two committees in Congress, veterans.senate.gov and veterans.house.gov. See what those committees are up to. And the good thing is both those websites have contact information where you can send your thoughts and your impressions to the committees directly for some input. So the last thing I just want to touch on before I turn it back over to Richard, we want to talk more about the issue of open burn pits, make another reminder about the film that's out there across the country now, is that the VA is also working to implement the Colmory Act, which is the new GI Bill provisions, which are very favorable to veterans. Unfortunately, you know, some of the provisions are rather complicated and are taking some time to implement. Some of the vocational rehab and employment programs taking a little time to implement. But Secretary Shulkin talked about those fair detail at the Senate testimony. So you can check that on the Senate website, veterans.senate.gov. So enough about those things. Let's shift gears, Richard, and talk about the burn pits. Before we get to that, just remind our listeners, our toll-free call-in number is 1-888-627-6008. Again, 1-888-627-6008. Over to you, Richard.
Thank you, David. Yes, the another important issue that we've been covering now for quite a while is the burn pits. These were used by U.S. military in Iraq and Afghanistan, and caused lung diseases and various kinds of cancer to U.S. troops stationed near those pits. On September the 11th, 2017, in our show, we had an interview with the film director and producer, Greg Lovett. His latest film is on the burn pits issue, and it is entitled Delay, Deny, Hope You Die, How America Poisoned Its Soldiers. The film deals with the important issue of open burn pits commonly used in the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, and which now are suspected of causing large numbers of veterans to suffer very serious health problems due to the numerous toxic substances which were incinerated in those huge burn pits. To find out more about the film, check it out on Facebook by typing in the words burn pit documentary in the Facebook engine. And if you're in the Washington, D.C. area, please attend the screening of Delay, Deny, Hope You Die at the Landmark E Street Cinema in Washington, D.C., and that's on March 18, 2018 at 7 p.m. Again, that's in the Washington, D.C. area, and it's at the Landmark E Street Cinema. And again, that's going to be on March 8, 2018 at 7 p.m. Even if you aren't in the Washington area, please contact your representative and the two U.S. senators and urge them or their staff to attend. Tickets are free while they last. As of early today, there are still more than 90 tickets left, but there's no telling how much longer they will last, so don't worry if you're interested in attending. This award-winning documentary tells the story of American soldiers who were poisoned by burn pits on military bases in Iraq and Afghanistan. Tens of thousands are sick, yet their plight has largely been ignored by mainstream media. It is imperative that you understand the magnitude of this issue because we need your help to get them the care they need. For those able to attend the free March 8th screening in Washington, D.C., please register for your free ticket on the website eventbrite.com. That's eventbrite, one word, .com. More showings of the Burn Pits documentary are already scheduled or tentatively scheduled for other cities around the country. The showings are based on crowdfunding, so they depend on certain minimum number of tickets being sold. You can order your tickets online at the website tugg.com. That's tug with two G's com under the film tab on that website. Look for the film Delay, Deny, Hope You Die. Again, the website for ordering tickets is TUGG.com, and look under the films tab on that webpage for the film Delay, Deny, Hope You Die. And as I said earlier, what a great idea would it be to get our representatives and U.S. senators to fill that cinema there at the landmark E Street Cinema.
And Richard, if I could add something, I just found out this past week that Congressman Bill Arrakis from Tampa Bay area of Florida, who's the vice chairman of the House Veterans Affairs Committee, he is committed now to going to the film. Hopefully he's on the staff as well. But, that you know, he's someone with a lot of power due to his position on the Veterans Affairs Committee. So hopefully it will make a big impression on him. And go ahead.
No, that's terrific. How did you find that out, by the way?
I'm trying to remember. I'm on his email newsletter list, and it was either there or on the Facebook page for the Burn Pit documentary. It was one of those two places where he said that he was going, which is good. So for those
that's
of you
great.
Out
maybe
there listening, go ahead.
No, maybe he can get the rest of his committee to go with him.
Well, I mean, and even if they don't, I mean, at least you know he is influential and he is interested in veterans issues. The other thing I would say for our listeners is, as Richard said, even if you're not in the Washington, D.C. area, it's the venue that's important there. And that's the home base for members of Congress, their staff, other veteran groups. So don't forget those. The headquarters for most veteran groups are, the Washington, D.C. area. So encourage those that you know to attend the film. I mean, the tickets are free. Can't be any easier than that. They just have to go to Eventbrite.com, and that's spelled event, and then Bright is BRITE.com. And you have to do the search on that website under the film category, and the film is called Delay, Deny, Hope You Die, March 8th, 2018, 7 p.m., the landmark E Street Cinema. It's not too far from the White House. But if you can't attend or you're nowhere near Washington, D.C., go to the website democracy.io. That's democracy.io. It's a very simple website. You type in your name and address, and it will automatically pull up the name of your representative, the U.S. House of Representatives, and your two state senators. And you can send all three of them a message. So you don't have to send three separate messages. You send them a message inviting them to attend this. And if you want some good boilerplate language, so you don't have to, create your own message, go to the Facebook page that Richard mentioned. Go to Facebook, type in Burn Pits Documentary, and you'll find the Facebook page that's run by the film director, Greg Levitt. And they have some postings on there, exactly what I'm talking about. The website, democracy.io, it gives you some canned language you can use to send to your representative. And again, maybe your representative can't go. They're busy people, but they got staff. So encourage them and their staff or their staff to attend this film. It's an eye-opener. Richard and I I've seen it a couple times and, in Florida. And we hosted a screening on November 1st in Brandon, and we got a fair number of people to attend. And it was an eye-opener. And
it really was. And for me, having sat in my office with numerous of our clients who were subjected to these burn pits, and to hear them tell the story and tell about their experiences, and then to see this movie, I mean, it was a big wow for me, because it really gave me the visualization that I really wasn't able to kind of wrap my head around when I'm sitting there listening to the veteran tell me, because a lot of these veterans, weren't able to really put it into words. And when you see the video, you can see why you can't put it into words. So by all means, go to the film. Do yourself a favor. And if you're in the D.C. area and you can attend, buy yourself some popcorn and a soda pop and sit back and watch a disturbing movie. But, definitely it is disturbing. But it's something that I think, you know, you really need to see.
It will bring tears to your eyes. If it doesn't bring tears to your eyes, you need some sort of a check on your, on maybe you've lost, touch with humanity. Because, I mean, even the toughest people combat veterans, what you're going to see in that film about the effect, what I'm talking about is the effect. I'm not talking about some dramatic explosions or something in combat, but I'm talking about the effect of veterans who are dying in the hospital, dying with their families around them because of diseases, which there's good, strong medical evidence talked about in this documentary that links it to this. And those of you that might have a tough time visualizing, we talk about burn pits. What the heck is that? Are you thinking about, some small fire that you relate to whenever you used to go camping with the scouts or something? No, we're talking about, and the biggest examples, 10 acres of all sorts of toxic garbage ignited with aviation fuel on top of it, which when you're burning in that situation is already toxic. And guess what? It's burning 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, years, for years and years. Most of the big ones have been shut down finally, but it doesn't wipe out the fact that there were, probably hundreds of thousands of veterans who served close by, very close by, these open burn pits. And, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to appreciate that when you're living that close to something that's spewing out the kind of toxic pollution, people are going to get sick. That's why these open burn pits are illegal in the United States, and the contract between U.S. military and the defense contractors, KBR, specifically said that they had to comply with United States EPA regulations, even though they were obviously overseas, Afghanistan and Iraq. But that wasn't done for years, and a lot of people are suffering. And this isn't the only story for veterans. It's not, but it's a very important one. It's one that we need to get solved now, not like the Agent Orange issue for the Vietnam vets where it took the VA 20 years. And the goal is for the VA to recognize that there is a list supported by sufficient medical evidence of respiratory diseases, other cancers, and other diseases that can be linked to the type of toxic substances which were burned in these pits, so that if someone served near them and they come down with one of these, there should be a presumption. Maybe if the VA wants to make it a rebuttal presumption, but at least make it a presumption so the veteran doesn't have to go out and try to find a private doctor at their own expense to support a medical opinion in their unique situation. So, it's the least the VA can do at this point if they want to prove that it's not an adversarial system. And again, the United States, it's a volunteer force. They expect people to sign up and put their life on the line. They understand the risks of going to war. They understand that. Everyone understands that. But whenever people are being poisoned, essentially, by their own military through recklessness, incompetence, or worse, and certainly whenever there appears to be shortcuts taken simply for the profit margins of the defense contractors, inexcusable. So see the film. And again, you may not be in Washington, D.C., but it's being screened at theaters around the country on a crowdfunded basis. Go to the website Richard mentioned, tug.com, T-U-G-G.com, or go to the Burn Pits page on Facebook, and you can even order your own DVD copy. It's that important. I urge our listeners, I certainly urge our veteran service officers out there and other veteran advocates and VA employees to see that film. So, well, we're about running out of time tonight, Richard, so why don't we do a quick wrap-up of our Coaching into Care program before we call tonight.
Great idea. If you are a family member of a veteran who has left the service and is having a tough time transitioning to civilian life, please be aware of the VA's program called Coaching into Care. It helps veterans having difficulty transitioning to home life. Returning home can be a tough adjustment, and loved ones can help. Coaching into Care offers free coaching to help you help your veteran. Give the program a call. Its number is toll-free 1-888-823-7425. 658. Its hours are Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Again, the coaching and the care number is 1-888-823-7458. In addition, I'd like to once again remind listeners that if you know a veteran who is suicidal or in a crisis of any kind, the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs also has a Veterans Crisis Line to help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Many veterans have committed suicide because they did not get the help they needed. Help them get the care they need to cope with their problems. Once again, the Veterans Crisis Line can help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Back to you, David, to close us down.
Thanks. We'd like to thank all of you for listening to the Veterans News Hour here on VBS Radio Station 1. We'd like to thank our producer of VBS Radio, Mr. Doug Newsom, and invite you listeners to become show guest sponsors and advertisers. Please tune in next week, same time, same station, for another edition of the Veterans News Hour. Until then, have a great week. Good night.
Good night.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll